The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning and welcome into First Take on this very special day. It's Good Friday, it's Passover, and it's Jackie Robinson Day. We'll dive deep into the legacy of Jackie Robinson in just a moment, but we start with the NBA playoffs. Big Perk is here, and let's get it. A major development in the NBA yesterday, our Brian Windhorst reporting that Ben Simmons continued. There he is. Big Perk, how we doing? Having some technical difficulties over here, so I take the producers out. But I see you, so I want to be polite. Good morning to you. It's a special day, the 75th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, Molly. You know, Stephen A., you know, when he get in L.A., he gets a bit Hollywood, you know. So he's showing up to work late and things to that nature, and it's all good. We go hold it down, though, Molly. We go hold it down till he
we
get
will
his stuff.
For sure.
It's a beautiful day.
Exactly.
It's an opportunity.
Oh, I hear his voice. There he is. There he is. He couldn't
I'm saying
fake
we have it.
He
we
needs to be a part of the shine.
Can we hear me, Molly? Can we hear me?
Yes,
of course I need
I
to be a part
now.
Of it. It's First Take, y'all. And, I mean, this is where we shine. I want to sit up there and say I'm looking forward to the day for a lot of reasons. Obviously, Jackie Robinson being one of them. But I just heard that lie Kendrick Perk has just told to you, Molly. I want to state for the record, I was here before Kendrick Perkins. I was actually drinking my tea, and Kendrick Perkins walked
I'm
in late, actually looking like Molly's big brother because he had on a sweatsuit like you have on sweatsuits before. Well, you show up on TV, Molly.
I
so I just want the record to show that, okay?
That's fine. I'm glad you put me on blast. I do live in two extremes. It's either full glam or no makeup and sweatpants, and I wouldn't want it any other way.
That's true.
Okay.
By the way, that means I have a mid-range game.
Okay. Look at you. Fair enough. I don't know what anyone at home just heard, but it's Jackie Robinson Day. We had some technical difficulties, and we're going to start with the playoffs. And, of course, we are going to honor the legend all day long. I apologize if I'm being redundant. Let's do this, gentlemen. So I'm going to get back to the news I just started to describe for the second time. A major development in the NBA. So yesterday, our Brian Windhorst reporting that Ben Simmons is working his way back from that back injury that's hampered him. We could see him in games 4, 5, or 6 of the round one Nets-Celtics series. Nets coach Steve Nash weighed in on that possibility.
It's up to Ben. Ben's back. You know, it's not up to me or any of us other than his back and how we can help that resolve. Great, but, you know, there's a chance Ben comes back. There's a chance he doesn't come back.
No, I'm not expecting him to play. I'm not putting any pressure on Ben to come out there and hoop, you know, so I'm not expecting him to do anything but just to get his body right. And, you know, get healthy as fast as he can, you know. So, in my mind, I'm preparing as if, like, we're playing with the team we have.
Big Perk, Ben Simmons trying to get it right, and we're about to get it right here on First Take. Let's do this. Should the Nets bring Ben Simmons back this series? Where are you on this?
No, they shouldn't. And in fact, no, they shouldn't. And listen, I think they should shut Ben Simmons down for the rest of the season. Look, this is becoming a distraction. Okay, you in the most crucial part of the season. You have to get ready to go against a hell of a squad in the Boston Celtics, and you're worrying about if Ben Simmons is going to return or not. He hasn't played since last June. What do people not realize with that? You don't just walk into the game of basketball at its highest level and expect this man to come out and be some type of savior or come out and think this man is going to come out and play at some type of elite level. Like, the fact that Steve Nash has to answer that question is beyond disturbing at this point. You are 2 or 3 days away from game one. You should be worried about how you're going to defend Jason Tatum, how you're going to defend Jaylen Brown, how you're going to get KD and Kyrie open if a double team comes, things of that nature. Is Bruce Brown going to be in the short role, et cetera, et cetera. You should not have to be answering questions about a guy that hasn't played since last June. And if I'm the head coach, I would say, you know what? At what point can we really bring Ben Simmons back? Let's just shut him down for the playoffs, because for the simple fact, we could talk about him ramping it up, But it's no 5-on-5 unless you're playing against the coaches and a few other guys that are not playing at the end of the bench, because you can't practice in the postseason. Guys don't practice in the postseason. Shut them down for the rest of the season.
First of all, that is utterly ridiculous. That's number one. Number two, first of all, don't be leaning to the left like you do it. I'd rather to the right, okay? Lean back a little bit more to your left. You ain't driving in one of your Bentleys or something like that, okay? You on First Take, all right? Sit up. Number two, let me tell you something right now, Kendrick Perkins. I can't believe you're saying this. We in California right now. I would remind y'all there's a couple of spots, Molly, you would notice. You lived here for about 4 years. There's salons. There's barbershops. There's places to get pedicures and manicures. I got a couple of spots to refer Ben Simmons to, because evidently that's what the hell that Kendrick Perkins want him to do. You want to get him a pacifier and a bib too? There's a couple of Walgreens and some other stores where we could get that for him. You want him to get him a masseuse? You want to get him a chiropractor? What the hell else does he need? What are we talking about here? This is utterly ridiculous. The fact of the matter is, he should have been playing from the time that he arrived from Philly. Guess what? He came from Philly. And you know what? Mental health issues, we take it very seriously. He gets traded from Philly, however, with people having trepidation about whether or not he was telling the truth about what those real issues were, okay? He gets to Brooklyn, got a cheesy smile to put George Foreman to shame, okay? That's what he was doing, hopping off the bench, high-fiving everybody, chilling out, all of this other stuff. Comfortable as hell, okay? But now we talk about basketball, and all of a sudden, well, we don't know if he's ready or not or whatever the case may be. The brother ain't placed since last June. I got that, okay? Don't get me started with the pothole on the turnpike he must have hit while I was getting his groove on and he hurt his hip. Don't get me started with that, okay? Because I didn't let that go, all right? There's a couple of reasons. I mean, I don't know what the hell you doing that you hurt your back when you ain't played since last June. I don't know. But in the end, I will tell you this. Ben Simmons and the fact that you don't require him to be some kind of offensive juggernaut, that essentially what you would need for him to do is to give you a few minutes where he could show you he could put his defensive prowess on display. That certainly is not going to hurt the Brooklyn Nets, who are highly suspect defensively. Anything you could get from him would be helpful, again, if he can give you anything. And if he says he can get out on the court and he could give you 10 to 15 minutes, I mean, damn, take it, because you can't rely on it. And last point, KP, because I want to veer left with what I'm about to say, and I really want your opinion about this. You know how much I love Kevin Durant. I know he got attitude with people. I love the brother, man. He's the best player in the world to me, and he's a good brother, and I respect his honesty and his candor. I got a lot of love for Kevin Durant. But I got to tell you something right now. He's getting on my damn nerves with this one thing, and somebody need to say this. I'm going to say this. He never got a problem with any of the other players. Don't you notice that? Kyrie missing games ain't no problem. Ben Simmons, no, I ain't gonna compel him. I mean, damn, it's like all KD wants to do is hoop, but you can't play by yourself. He never says anything about anybody else playing. You'll get on Bruce Brown for expressing some bravado and telling you, yo, I think we could take Boston or whatever. And I'm not saying KD wasn't wrong to do that. He was right to sit up there and say, we just need to hoop. Shut up and hoop. He was right. He wasn't wrong about that. I'm just saying, damn, it's Kyrie. It's Ben Simmons. It's anybody. I mean, don't. I would love to see Kevin Durant go like this. Yo, man, we trying to win the damn championship. Whatever we could get from anybody, we need it. Or everybody should play. It would be nice to hear him say that just once. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, no, you have a great point in there about the KD piece, but I will give Kevin Durant credit for saying this yesterday. He did say, I'm preparing myself to go out there and play without Ben Simmons. That's where my mindset is at. He said that yesterday in the interview. Here's the problem, Stephen A., and I get it. Play Ben Simmons 10 or 15 minutes. If he could go, keep ramping it up to 20 minutes and things to that nature. See, when you're in the postseason, every possession counts, okay? And every game counts. So you lose a possession that could possibly cost you the game, that could possibly cost you the series. So when you're trying to implement and get Ben Simmons back in the fix of things, you don't really have time for him and his mistakes. This is the time where you're trying to limit the most mistakes as possible. You don't have time to try to get Ben Simmons in and help and see how he's looking and get his get his rhythm back and all that. No, that's what you do in the regular season. And I said this before, when you, me and Molly on here on First Take, I said this before, Ben Simmons needs to come back with at least 10 to 15 games left in the regular season to get his legs up under him, to see how he's feeling, to see how the chemistry is going to work, everything and above. And now people are really thinking that it's a possibility that he could come back at the highest level of basketball right now against this Boston Celtic team and go out there and make some type of stance on the defensive end. Let him come back and try to guard Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown with a hurt back.
Let me get
okay,
it.
You keep talking about his what he, you keep talking about what he's going to bring on the defensive end. He going to get cooked.
Stephen A., I want to come to you on this because obviously you were off yesterday having to travel, all of you guys getting out to the West Coast for the playoffs, understandable. But we had Tim Legler here, Jay Will. They argued that he would be a liability. He'll do way more harm than good. Perk essentially saying the same thing. So why do you still think it's the right decision to bring him back in the series?
Because I don't think you could get much worse defensively if you're the Brooklyn Nets. And I'm on the record. Kendrick Perkins is very, very important. I am questioning the authentic legitimacy of that back injury. Let's be very, very clear. It ain't like I'm sitting there saying, talking about Larry Johnson or somebody who had those perpetual back injuries, and I'm saying, crawl your behind out there. Oh, no, guys. I'm saying, look, I'm quite sure something's been tweaked. I'm quite sure he might not be 100%. I'm quite sure he might not be out of shape. But far be it for me to be some conspiracy theorist, but I'm going to break it down to y'all. So you in Philly, and you have these mental health issues, okay? Mental health issue did prevent, you have the mental health issues. You don't want to play with the team, okay? Fine. You get to Brooklyn. You seem happier, seem in good spirits, the whole bit. But my belief is, again, they might be concerned about those very mental health issues that if we put them out there, and guess what? He wet the bed and he don't get it done, he'll take a step back up here. That's where I'm coming from with it. I'm not saying there's no back injury. I mean, Woj broke it down to me. He's getting injected and all of this other stuff. And we know I ain't going to question Wojnarowski now. What I'm saying, however, is usually some of those injection shots are things that enable you to be able to deal with the pain to some degree, KP, you know this, so you can go out there and play. Where it comes with Ben Simmons, somehow, some way, you ain't played since last June, okay? And not only have you not played since last June, but you ain't played since last June, your legs are clearly rested, you got fresh legs, you haven't subjected yourself to anything, okay? Plus, you get in the shots, and still, you can't dribble a basketball? You can't go out there and see if you can play? We've seen people with back injuries go out on the court to at least find out what they can do. It puts it particularly in a playoff situation. I am questioning. I'm not saying there's no back injury. I am questioning the seriousness of it because I think they're worried about if he can't perform, he's not going to be able to take the heat and he might falter and go in a negative direction. I think that's what they're potentially protecting here. And I think it's a damn shame because it's not stopping him from filing that grievance to make sure he get $20 million.
Well, here I am. This is why I'm at with Ben Simmons, Stephen A., and everything you just said, I have the same questions. This is why I'm at, and I'm going to just put it out there. I'm like this with Ben Simmons. I think Ben Simmons is more about his fashion statements and what the game has to offer outside of basketball than actually playing the game of basketball. And okay. I'm to that point. Because I don't understand for the life of me how they even make the trade when you have to take a physical and you have to pass a physical to even get the trade pushed through.
Right.
We didn't know about the back issues then. So that's why I'm not questioning you to that point. But my whole thing is shut them down for the rest of the season. It's for the betterment of the team. They don't need to be worrying about if Ben is coming back. All the Nets need to be worried about is the opponent that's in front of them.
Well, that's what Kevin Durant seems to be focused on, but it is being reported that he did have an epidural shot in the back in March 22nd. All right, Big Perk will be back with us in just a bit. No, I know, I'm just giving the facts. Perk, you'll be back in just a bit. Stephen A., I got a quick take for you right now, though. Steph Curry, speaking of injuries, has been out since March 16th with a foot injury, but the team is optimistic he will return to the court as the Warriors open the playoffs against the Denver Nuggets. That is Saturday, as in tomorrow. Stephen A., how important is it for Curry to be ready game one?
I think that you don't need to find yourself in any kind of hole going up against the Denver Nuggets, because Jokic is the real deal and the people around him are playing exceptionally well, and they're an exceptionally coached team. Denver is not a joke. They're not a team to summarily dismiss, and they could beat and would beat Golden State, in my estimation, without Steph Curry. It's important he's available.
Fair enough. We'll keep it rolling here. So playoff basketball, I'm here for all of it. But there's something even more important on my mind today, Stephen A., as well. Today's April 15th. It's the 75th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in Major League Baseball. Our own Doug Glanville wrote this piece on the impact of Jackie sport in society. I just want to check with producers. Do we have the piece ready? Is that a yes? We have the piece? Okay, let's play that.
Jackie Robinson is our diamond. He gave us his infinite strength by pointing us to a future when we were not ready. He was transparent by letting his light shine through even in the face of hate. He conducted a symphony that defines the best of what it means to be a team, to love one another as one. He took the heat and tension generated by his presence and cooled our irrational fears so that we can find true love in our greatest game. Jackie Robinson is who we are, what we play, when we remember, where we came from, how we forgive, and why we can endure the impossible. It is fitting that baseball is played on a diamond, a jewel that depends on its priceless history being present at all times, to remind us that our past reflects how we embrace our greatest future. He touched the four corners of our heart, took us home so that we could all be 42, not just today, but every day.
On Jackie Robinson Day, players all across baseball will be wearing number 42, and we here at First Take will honor the legend as well. We now bring in the man himself, Doug Glanville. Doug, great to have you with us this morning. The piece is so well done. Tell me this, where does sports stand 75 years after Jackie's historic debut?
Hey, Molly, Stephen A. It's a work in progress. And you think about what he was able to accomplish despite all the pressures and all the change that was going on in our country. And Jackie Robinson set that tone for being able to push us forward. And sports are still grappling with what we're always grappling with in larger society, how to include more people, how to make sure equality really is not just a punchline, but something that we live by. And every step of the way, Jackie Robinson was about fairness and trying to make sure we're all celebrated under this large umbrella of humanity. And he did it on the field, but then when he retired, he said, let me keep going. And he, you know, whether it was in the boardroom or whether he was working and testifying in courts, he always fought to uphold justice and uphold fairness. And so as our sports are always navigating, whether it's coaching, hiring, or diversity and leadership, they all kind of reflect what he set out when he first set foot on that diamond.
You know, a lot of times in life when we look at great historical figures, we talk about their plight, we talk about what they endured, but somehow, some way, I find myself, Doug, on so many occasions, feeling we never touch truly to the level of appreciation we should have for what these people endured and what and why they were willing to do it. You know, recently I had to read up on something, and I was reading up about Kennesaw Mountain Landis, the first commissioner for Major League Baseball. And anytime you hear that commissioner's name, you hear about the Black Sox scandal, for example, of 1919 and what have you. And you hear about eight players, they were throwing games and stuff like that, and how they were ultimately acquitted. And that's what you would hear about Mountain Landis, who did not let them back into baseball. You know what I think about when I think about Kennesaw Mountain Landis, Doug? I think about how the fact that Jackie Robinson actually should have integrated the sport of Major League Baseball at least 5 years earlier. But that commissioner prevented it from happening. Because that commissioner had complete autonomy. Because he had helped resurrect the image of the world of baseball because they had lost their way because the fans had turned against them to some degree. And that man played a significant role in doing so. But in the process of doing that, he'd give lip service to supporting integrating the sport of baseball. But behind closed doors was encouraging teams, don't you dare think about bringing Jackie Robinson up here. And it wasn't until he was gone as commissioner, when he passed away, actually, that Jackie Robinson ultimately was allowed to integrate the sport of Major League Baseball. Jackie Robinson was qualified years before to be in Major League Baseball, before he actually arrived. And that's what I want people to remember about that. He was not just deprived decency, civil liberties, respect, decorum, all of those things. He was also deprived years in advance of what he had earned and what he had deserved and of his rightful place in the sport of Major League Baseball. It was delayed. And then to come into the league in 1947 and still have to endure racial epithets, death threats, you know, humiliation from fans, from teammates, from the league. Don't get me started with the St. Louis Cardinals, how they were willing to, you know, boycott, not even play the damn game rather than have him on the field, or the racist tendencies of the Philadelphia Phillies, particularly their manager, and how abhorrent his behavior was while Jackie Robinson was walking up to bat, while he was at the plate to bat, for crying out loud. We know about these stories. The man has endured things that most of us, if not all of us in the modern era, can speak about, but it's from a position of imagination, not from a position of actual experience, because I don't know of anyone in the modern era, even with the insults, the occasional insults and things of that nature that are thrown out at the modern athlete, that ever had to endure specifically the things that Jackie Robinson had to do. And to know that he did this, think about it with Branch Rickey and what have you, former owner for the Dodgers, who wanted him to integrate baseball and wanted him not just because of his play, but his temperament, because you were going to have to withstand the shrapnel of venom that was going to get thrown in your direction. All of those things mattered. And he picked the right guy, and he was asking him to stomach and take things that no human being should actually take. That's not just about wanting to play the sport of baseball. That's about having a higher mission, a higher goal, a higher purpose, and obviously extending far beyond your individual self. He didn't adopt this mentality once he arrived. He accepted the challenge before he arrived. And that's a really, really big thing, Doug, that I think that everybody should recognize about the greatness of Jackie Robinson and why he's so worthy of being honored in the fashion he is by Major League Baseball. And as has been the case since 2004, where the number 42 jersey is worn and nobody else can wear that number for the rest of Major League Baseball's history. I just think that it's important that people realize that.
Well, Stephen A., one point you underscored very well is that he was qualified, but so were a whole lot of other players. So, you know, he got the opportunity, as you mentioned, because he was the right fit. He would be able to endure and balance off the performance and also handling the pressure. And I think you're hitting on also why we need to continually retell the story. Because as new information comes up, as we get more power in representation or diversity of representation, then we see the Kennesaw Landis stories. We start to understand and recontextualize what actually happened. You know, my family, my great aunts and uncles settled and migrated to Philadelphia area, and they liked baseball, but when they watched how Ben Chapman and the Phillies treated Jackie Robinson, they were like, we're done. And the 50s, that was it. But I got traded over to Philly in 1997, and my great aunts and uncles says, okay, we're cool now. We're cool again with baseball. My great nephew is now on this team, and now we're going to reopen our possibilities. So it is important that we keep that legacy alive, because he represents the vigilance we need to have for freedom at all times, and the appreciation and respect, but also because when you think about his story, it's universal. We all deal with those struggles to be included, to be respected, and he did it in our national pastime, and then he did it off the field till the day he died. He never stopped fighting, and that lesson is for all of us.
It's incredibly pivotal, Doug, because the bottom line is this. Let's transition real quickly to the modern day era. You know, you have a lot of people, certainly no one that has to endure what Jackie Robinson endured. But remember, he came there with a vision. He understood what the mission was. He understood it was bigger than himself. And as a result, there's a role that he had to play. And there was a level of tolerance that he had to exercise, that he had to stomach in order to continue to march forward to ultimately achieve what he achieved. Not just for himself, but for black folks, not just in the world of professional baseball, but throughout the sports world and beyond. Certainly nothing like that is going on today, but on far too many occasions, if you don't march lockstep in concert with what people think you should do specifically, I'm talking about the nuggets, every little nugget, march this way, do it this way, all of a sudden, your question, your intent is questioned, your intestinal fortitude is questioned, your agenda is questioned, your soul is questioned. When people don't realize, when it's about the marathon, not about the sprint, sometimes you have to sit up there and handle things a bit differently because you know that the greater goal is what you are after. And so there's a game that you have to play. There's a maneuvering that you have to exercise. And sometimes far too many people in our society don't realize it. But we sit here and we celebrate Jackie Robinson, and half the time we don't even realize why. Specifically, what this man endured, why he was willing to endure it, how long he was willing to endure it, and what his true mission was in the end. And that's what it was all about. So I love the fact that we get an opportunity to talk about the great Jackie Robinson, who passed away entirely too soon, mm-hmm. at the age of 53. He passed away at age 53. Yep. Think about what he
still
endured
potentially
and the peace and tranquility he was robbed of.
Mm-hmm. And now we bring in Jessica Mendoza. Jess, great to have you with us and can't wait to hear your perspective. So tell us this, where does sports stand 75 years after Jackie's debut?
It's not where it needs to be. I mean, I think about what Jackie, even before he passed, one of his messages is he wants to see, quote, a black face managing baseball. We have two right now, and Dave Roberts and Dusty Baker. And we just need to continue to grow at all levels. I mean, we've talked about it at the youth level. We talk about it at the college level. It was throughout the minor leagues within Major League Baseball. I mean, the peak was hit in 1986 when we saw close to 20% of players were African American. We're below 8% where we're at right now. And it has to be at every single level. For me, I mean, just being able to see Latin players growing up, Roberto Clemente having the what was broken with Jackie Robinson and bringing in more color, but now the numbers, even though they reached a peak, are going down. And that has to change. We've talked about it with the draft. We've talked about it with the youth level. It's being worked on, but what scares me the most, Stephen A., right now, is the fact that we're seeing the draft is being cut. I mean, the rounds of baseball have gone from 50 to 40 to now 20. And that's where we're going to lose so many of our minority players.
Jessica, you brought up a great point. Real quick, Stephen A., Doug, I want to go to you. How do we institute that change?
Well, there's been policy put in place with the Selig rule many years ago, but the challenge has been that when you have power and you're sort of challenged to share it, and the perception that people are taking positions where you're entitled to have them, then all of a sudden you lose that diversity. You lose the diversity of thought that you get by having a diverse boardroom and having experiences representative of this vast audience of people that come from so many different backgrounds and also from different backgrounds to play the sport. So the game has to continue to navigate the top echelon. Baseball has done better when it comes to sort of lower level power, but when it comes to ownership, leadership on the field, people running the organizations, that's where the numbers have stagnated, and they're trying to create programming to do that. It's a very slow journey and a slow walk. And when you have power that concentrates around people that are having the same shared experience, then you lose that opportunity to be exposed to different points of view and therefore lose the chance to be truly representative.
I appreciate where both you and Jessica are coming from. I certainly will defer to your level of expertise when it comes to Major League Baseball. I'm certainly not going to question you guys at all. I completely agree with you. I would tell you that as an African-American looking at the numbers in Major League Baseball, it's been incredibly alarming, but I'm not going to hold just Major League Baseball accountable. When you look at it from this perspective, and I've talked to this, talked about this subject to several Major League Baseball players in the past, because obviously you guys know a few of them that were involved with the RBI program, reviving baseball in the inner cities. And so they made a concerted effort throughout the years, and I guess they're still trying. I haven't checked up recently, but I guess they're still trying. I certainly don't want to summarily dismiss that. But the number of Latino players, 28.5% Latino. Well, this what does that tell you? They're going to the Dominican. They're going to Venezuela. They're going to different places, and they're looking for these players. You don't have African-Americans that are really, really playing a lot of baseball in the United States of America. Why is that? Well, you look at football, obviously it's a violent sport, but it's incredibly popular and it's very conspicuous and it's in your face. So we can point to the Major League Baseball and say they need to do a better job of marketing their own sport so they can further ingratiate themselves with the younger demographic, and that way they'll be as attracted to the sport, which is something we've all talked about in the past. When you look at the NBA, it don't take anything but a basketball, y'all, and a rim. You don't even need one with a net. You can go to any park in any city in America and you could be out on a basketball court. So that ultimately is a contributing factor as well, and those are the kind of things that I need to be that I think need to be pointed out. But ultimately, to me, what it comes down to, again, is that willingness to ingratiate yourself with that younger demographic. And here's the hard part, Jessica, when it comes to black men. Doug knows what I'm about to say, but I'm gonna say it, okay? When it comes to black men in Major League Baseball, do you know the biggest issue? Trust. And I'm not talking about Jackie Robinson. I'm not talking about Major League Baseball history with, you know, Mountain Landis. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about trust when you look at the minor league system. See, if I can ball on a basketball court, I can get drafted out of high school. If I can ball on a high school level, I can get signed by a predominantly white institution and be on national television. They can't hide my talent. But even if I'm big time on a high school level in baseball, even if I get drafted, even if they put money in my pocket, there's a minor league system in all likelihood that I'll have to go through, and there's a process that I'll have to endure in order to ultimately get to the big leagues. That's not just about my ability. That's about my willingness to trust you will recognize my ability and give me what I justly deserve by giving me the shine that I need, the notoriety that I need, the opportunities that I need, etc., etc. And for a young black man to feel like I have to trust a multitude of layers that I'll have to go through. I have to trust that they will fairly segue me through those levels. That's a very, very hard ask to present to an African-American in the United States, considering our history. That is what I believe is the biggest problem. If you told a kid, guess what? And I'm not saying they should, but if you told a kid, look, you big time, we're going to take you straight from high school. And, you know, you come to Major, you could be pitching for the Yankees tomorrow. And you know, you had something like that going on, like they do in Major League Baseball. I'm sorry, in the NBA, it would be a different animal. It's hard when you got to trust the process, because young black men don't trust the process in the United States of America. Doug, if I'm wrong, tell me so.
Well, no, but I think part of it is leadership. As you mentioned, when you have representation that understands that experience, it makes a big difference to feel comfortable in that environment and feel like you will get the fair shake and the fair opportunity to advance.
Yeah, Jessica will be back with us. But Doug, you mentioned something earlier on Get Up that Jackie Robinson became the first athlete ever to letter in four sports at UCLA. I found that incredible. Baseball, basketball, football, and track. So I wanted to mention that note again. And I know you'll be spending some time today at UCLA, I understand.
Well, I'm calling the game Stanford, Jessica's alma mater, and UCLA baseball. So get a chance to see where his stomping grounds as a great athlete and a great civic leader. So this will be exciting to talk about his college days. And as you mentioned, lettered in four sports, and his
incredible
worst sport was baseball. So you can imagine how great an athlete he was.
Oh, my goodness. Unbelievable. I know Jessica will be watching that as well. 10 p.m. Eastern, that game on ESPN2. Doug, thank you so much for the time. Enjoy
all
the festivities today. And Jessica, we'll talk to you in just a bit.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. Breaking news into First Take. The Packers are set to extend Aaron Rodgers.
Rodgers zips one in there. Touchdown, Packers.
Aaron Rodgers is phenomenal.
But you guys are supposed to lose Devontae Adams. Losing Devontae Adams, that drastically compromises the success of this team.
The countdown continues, and we continue our First Take draft blitz with the Packers on Thursday. Green Bay signed former number 4 overall pick wide receiver Sammy Watkins to a 1-year, $4 million deal. We all know Green Bay needs to add multiple receivers this offseason, especially after the Devontae Adams trade. Some expect the team to draft a wideout with one of their two first-round picks. Now, Watkins could play a key role with the departure of Adams and Marquez Valdes-Scantling. The Packers also paid Aaron Rodgers this offseason. The four-time MVP will be a Packer for at least two more seasons. Only the Chiefs and Jaguars have more picks in the draft. On that note, we bring in our guy, Super Bowl champion Ryan Clark. RC, been a minute. Good to see you, sir. And I'll start with you, Ryan.
Good to see you.
Can I interrupt for one second?
Of course.
Molly, I want to say that this man right here, Ryan Clark, they got a podcast doing a hell of a job, my brother. Phenomenal
Thank
job.
Thank you, man. Appreciate
Phenomenal job. Even though I Ryan brought up my hairline, but we'll talk about that another time.
That was me. That was Channing. I ain't doing Stephen A.
RC, where can folks where and when can they watch your podcast?
Yeah, the Pivot Podcast, it's on YouTube. We drop every Tuesday at 12 o'clock. We sometimes drop on Friday at 3. It's also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We appreciate the support. The Stephen A. episode was absolutely amazing, and we got an opportunity to show people a different side of Stephen A. that I know about very deeply, and as he's always been great to me, but it was cool that other people DM'd me, texted me, called me, and said, you know, we didn't know all of those things about Stephen A, or that he could even be that way. And I think that's what we're trying to show people about athletes, entertainers, artists, analysts, whoever we get an opportunity to sit down with.
Just know that when Ryan does that and he comes into your home, because Molly, the interview was in my house, he came in and took over. He didn't take off his shoes. He walked in right in my refrigerator. You know what I'm saying? Was eating my food and all this other stuff.
That.
He didn't give a damn. He walked in, he said, I'm your boy. I'm your boy. I'm here. And just rolled up in there and took over. I just want to say that.
I saw it. It's phenomenal. It's still available there on YouTube for everyone to see. And RC, I know you're complimenting Stephen A. And obviously, there's a lot of misconceptions about who he is as a human being, an exceptional one. But RC, we're also seeing your range as well. So
yes,
kudos to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. So keep it going.
Learned well.
Oh, my goodness. How does this come back to you? Just let me compliment the man and live. Okay, Ryan, did trading Devontae cost the Packers a shot at the Super Bowl? Because in case anyone forgot, that's what this segment was about, the Packers.
Yes. You know what, Molly? Absolutely. Now, listen, I don't necessarily believe that the Green Bay Packers were going to win the Super Bowl this year as it was. Let's look at this team the last 3 years. They've won 13 games, Molly. They got to the NFC Championship twice. You lose to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You lose to the San Francisco 49ers. And this year, you lose to the San Francisco 49ers in the divisional round of the playoffs, and they only scored 13 points. So this was a team that had trouble producing points in critical moments the last three seasons, and you had the best wide receiver in football. And you mentioned they also lost that MVS, and now Devontae Adams is in Las Vegas, and you have Aaron Rodgers, who is on the deal. Well, it's going to be hard to go out and get veteran pass catchers who have produced recently. You go out and you get Sammy Watkins, but we know whether it was in Kansas City 2 years ago or Baltimore last year, he struggled with injuries. He struggled with production, and now Sammy Watkins and Alan Lazard are your two top receivers. Robert Tonyan coming off of a knee injury. And so when you think about this team as a whole, I believe they'll struggle offensively, even with having Aaron Rodgers, because we know what he's looked like when Devontae Adams has not been available. Nathaniel Hackett's now in Denver. There is so much change happening on this offense in Green Bay. And this is a team that had lacked offense in the playoff situations. It's now going to be on their head coach, as my friend would say, Matt LaFleur, to produce and find ways for them to score in critical football moments, and I just don't know if he's good enough to do it.
Well, first of all, it's Matt LaFleur. That's like Matt LaFleur. Yes. That's what it is. That's number one. Number two, let me say this to you. Let me say this to you, Ryan Clark. You might not be wrong, but I want to hear that. I want to hear that. I mean, this brother just got his new contract, didn't he? Didn't Aaron Rodgers just get his new contract? Did he go on some 12-day sabbatical to cleanse his body with the nastiness that he highlighted for the national audience to hear over the Pat McAfee show? Didn't Aaron Rodgers, I mean, isn't he cleansed? Isn't he supposed to be better? He already great. He's already phenomenal. But now you're cleansed and you're going to be great too? I'm sorry. Last time I checked, isn't Aaron Jones still there? Isn't Dylan still there? Don't you still have a backfield? Isn't Matt LaFleur the new is still a coach? He's the same coach that's won 13 games a season his first 3 years on a job, living off of Aaron Rodgers. Ain't that true? And last time I checked, I'm looking at it from that perspective. Yeah, okay, how much better is Minnesota going to be? We don't know. The Detroit Lions, we really supposed to be worried about them. The Chicago Bears, we really supposed to be worried about them. The Justin Fields era has officially begun, and we get all of that. But the point is, when you look at the AFC North, when you look, that should still be Green Bay's division to win. And as a result, even if you don't win 13 games, let's say, for example, you win 11 or 12 games, okay, it'll still have you as a top three seed, right? If you're a top three seed, then we're talking about you needing to go on the road and win a playoff game. Well, who cares? You lose at home anyway. You might as well try something new. They've lost at home the last 2 years in the playoffs. So, I mean, what difference does it make? I'm not saying that you're wrong, but this gloom and doom, I ain't giving the Green Bay Packers that. The expectations are still there. Damn it, get it done. You took the money. You took the money. Matt LaFleur's still there, right? He's supposed to be able to show something, right? Still got to run a game. Offensive line's supposed to be pretty decent. No excuses.
Yeah, Stephen A., listen, it's not about excuses. It's about answering the question, did they trade away their Super Bowl opportunity? And I believe they did. I believe this offense, even with the way A.J. Dillon was able to run, even with the way Aaron Jones was able to run, it was really a great two-man attack from the running back perspective. Where was that production against San Francisco when you needed it? Where was Aaron Rodgers, the MVP, not only caliber quarterback, the MVP winning quarterback, the reigning two-time MVP? Where was him making the plays that he needed to make? Where was this team being together as a whole, right? Special teams, defense, and offense, and finding ways to not get punch blocked, finding ways to not get long kickoffs returned by Deebo Samuel. As a team, they didn't produce. And now you're going to tell me you can take away not only the best wide receiver on your team, but maybe the best wide receiver in the NFL, period, and you think you're going to produce or have a quarterback who is just as good as he's been the last 2 years? Let's not forget, along with Aaron Rodgers being first-team All-Pro the last 2 years, so was Devontae Adams. And I know what we'll say. Devontae Adams had Aaron Rodgers, and that's why he made the team. But it also goes the other way. And so when you lose production like that on the offensive side of the football, when you were so dependent on it, that's difficult. Yeah. That is difficult to me, Stephen A., and I do believe the expectations have changed.
I agree, but if anybody can overcome it, it's Aaron Rodgers. Damn it, you better. You better.
Enough. Well, not sold. I know.
Better find out. Better find out a way to score more than 10 points on your own home damn field.
I think we found out.
With Jimmy Garoppolo's on the other sideline.
I think we found out last season. But hey, I mean, some people like to repeat history.